The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox failed to rally, or really hit it all, dropping Game 1 against the Dodgers 5-2. Their record falls to 55 wins, 50 losses. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Terry Cushman Jr. and a new face, Doug from Dedham, Mass. How you doing, Doug? Good to have you here.
Great to be here, guys. Doing all right, doing a little better after if we could have pulled that out, but glad to be here. Happy to join.
Definitely. Now, what's funny, just a little, you know, trivia for behind the scenes stuff, is me and Doug actually interviewed alongside each other, funnily enough, both stages of the interview process together.
Yeah. And yeah, once I heard that voice, I knew I was up against it.
Yeah, it was funny because I was going to shoot you an email, funnily enough, because I was like, I really like that Doug guy. I want to keep in touch with him. And before I could, you sent me one saying the same exact thing. So it's kind of cool to see on the show here. You've been producing great articles for the Bastards of Boston Baseball.com, which I always try to rep. So welcome to the Bastards.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you. Pumped.
Now, tonight, you know, would have been nice if you could have joined us during a victory for your first show on here. But, you know, let's start with a silver lining, which I think was Brian Bayo's outing. You know, it's one of those games that I think the box score looks a lot worse than it really was. You know, 6 hits, 2 walks, only 5 Ks, 3 runs, 5.1 innings. You look at that, you go, ah, that's so-so. But honestly, he got a little unlucky. There was one of those sort of bloop hits that fell right between 3 defenders. There was another play where maybe if Rafaela was in center field rather than Duran, maybe the center fielder would have gotten to it, maybe not. But honestly, from what I saw from Bayo, he was able to settle down very nicely after the third inning, which I feel has kind of been a weakness so far in his career. What did you guys think?
Go ahead, Doug.
No. I thought even from the first strikeout of Ohtani, his stuff looked good. And I mean, going 1-2-3 in the first against that tough lineup, I thought right away, you know, his stuff is looking good tonight. And yeah, like you said, he had a couple flares, you know, a couple like infield little droopers, but it's tough. I mean, the lineup's tough, right? It's the best lineup in the league. To walk away with 3 runs on just no really hard contact much. You know, I thought he looked really good, and I thought his strikeouts looked really good. I thought his stuff looked good tonight.
I have zero complaints about Brian Bayo as well. You know, he gave up, I'll see how many hits it was. Definitely only 3 walks, struck out 5. And like you said, Nick, got really unlucky with some soft contact there. And, you know, it's hard to really blame him. And really, all season long, it hasn't, for the most part, been the pitching. You know, when you talk about all those one-run games we lost, it's been the offense. And they only put up 5 hits. 2 of them were Connor Wong. So, you know, that was a bad night if he put up literally 40% of your hits. And he did get his first extra base hit, by the way, just before August. So, but getting back to Bayo, extremely solid, gave you a chance. I actually had this as a win. You know, I was thinking the Red Sox were going to win tonight. That Sheehan kid, he's coming back from Tommy John, apparently. This is, what, his 3rd or 4th start. Hasn't looked super impressive, but outside of one of those early innings, he pitched really well. Had a couple of 6-pitch innings. And I said after that first 6-pitch inning, that's when the Red Sox put up, what, 2 runs? I was just thinking, yeah, that was in the third. I was just thinking, like, when he goes in the inning, I'm like, when he goes back in the dugout, excuse me, I was just thinking, wow, Bayo didn't really have any time to unwind, and now he's going to come right back out after literally just being in there a minute. And so it didn't surprise me that that was kind of the sideways inning for him. Not that it was bad. I mean, we should have given him more run support, but that was the inning that flipped it. And then, of course, later on, Alcala kind of put it out of reach.
Yeah, that was a really unfortunate home run. And it sucks, too, because one of the base runners was it was assigned to Chris Murphy, you know, because he gave up the hit. And it's a shame because, honestly, Murphy came out. He pitched 1.2 innings. And he's been a really nice piece to this pen. You know, he's not someone that I'm counting on for high leverage necessarily. I think maybe I don't doubt seeing him take a step forward into a high leverage situation in the future necessarily. I think he's still relatively young. Young enough, but yeah, it's just a shame that we went to Alcala and pretty much immediately Teoscar Hernandez, who I remember there was so much speculation about, oh, we want him in Boston, are we gonna sign him, all this. No, of course he goes to the Dodgers, was a huge piece for them last year. And even though his year this year, he's doing all right, but he's not like knocking down the barn door or anything like that, but against us he is. And he just, man, as soon as I saw that two-run home run, I sort of kissed our comeback goodbye in my head. I was like, one run? We can do a one-run comeback. As soon as it was three that late, just based off of how we were swinging the bat up to that point, I felt all hope go out the window.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And even on Murphy's first batter was that ball that you think Sedan has. If he's out there in center, that double that is – so seeing him at second is just disappointing, I think. And seeing Duran in center, I mean, he had an all right game, but he let one drop in front of him, let that one go off the wall. If Sedan's there, it could be a different story.
You know, I mean, you obviously need his bat in the lineup, but I just don't know why. I don't know what the fetish is for David Hamilton. The dude just, his defensive numbers are better than I thought. You know, he is just about a plus one defensive war on the year. For some reason, I just feel like he boots it every now and then, but, you know, maybe I'm just not remembering it right. But, you know, you've got the deadline coming up, and we'll probably get into that later on, but you've got a golden opportunity to bring up a white hot Vaughn Grissom, showcase him a little bit. Maybe he can be the second or third piece in a big trade, and maybe provide a spark on top of that and help win you some games. But no, we got Hamilton and I guess that would still keep Rafael in the infield either way, but you don't have a very robust offense after the break, and now you're compromising yourself even more defensively.
Yeah, it's tough to see, and it's so funny with Hamilton because we hear it. How many times is Cora going to say, we just need to get this guy going? He's not going, all right? unless you say he's going home, maybe, because it's ridiculous. You know, he was sat at the bench today. He really just didn't have a big role, and it's funny because We had those two pinch hits, which I'd like to talk with you guys about as well. But before we get into that, I agree on the Vaughn Grissom take. I see the vibe sort of shifting on Red Sox Twitter. I see a lot of people saying we want a Vaughn Grissom redemption arc of some kind. He's been putting together a good month. And, you know, he's still pretty young. You're young enough to turn it around, hopefully. And like you said, either he's going to be a spark plug for us, or he's going to be a piece that we can sort of package together to get some serious help at the deadline. And either of those outcomes for me are better than him just sitting down as extra depth that clearly is below guys like Nick Sogard and Eaton and all of and Hamilton. Apparently it's frustrating to watch, really.
Yeah. He's been raking, and you just, like, I feel like no one talks about him. They're just like trying to keep him down there for some reason. I don't really know, but he's been raking most of the year.
And you know, it might have something to do with options, because I did see that Hamilton wasn't down there long enough, I guess, to activate or to burn an option for the year. So maybe that went into their decision making. That's something that I'll have to leave to the front office. You know, they have their numbers and everything. Maybe something makes more sense in their heads. But just looking at the players, I can't help but feel that Vaughn Grissom would just be a lot more electric right now than anything David Hamilton could give.
I mean, if you're Craig Breslow, you've lost a lot of trades, and most of them aren't consequential. You know, you didn't give up big assets to get a lot of these guys, but in totality, you've lost a lot of trades. One of them really was the Chris Sale trade, as it turned out. Wins a Cy Young. And I didn't even hate it at the time, and I'm still not that mad about it. But you've got a chance to kind of change the narrative on that trade a little bit if Grissom can come up and help you. He's another he's a righty bat, which you don't have a ton of. And and he would have, I mean, he did play first base for us last year before he messed up his hamstring or whatever it was. And I if he's been playing first all year, that's kind of where he needs to be. You can play Romy at second. He'll give you an adequate, glove there. And he's been quiet. And actually, well, why don't you go ahead, Nick, because you wanted to talk about those pinch hits.
Yeah, the pinch hitting was interesting. So we went and we took out Willier Abreu and Abraham Toro back-to-back, which I understand they're both considered to be platoon guys, and the numbers back that up. Unfortunately, as Willier has gotten a little more playing time versus lefties, funnily enough, his numbers versus lefties this year have dripped down a little bit. But we go back to, let's see here, it was the seventh inning, bottom of the seventh, start of the inning, Willier Abreu should be leading off. We pinch hit Romy Gonzalez. Unfortunately, he strikes out on a foul tip. Then, immediately after that, we put in Rob Refsnyder. He grounds out. So, because of that, very frustratingly, we're rallying in the ninth. Trevor Story, beautiful double. Masataka Yoshida does ground out, but I thought it was a really good at-bat, and he did force Edmund to make a really good defensive play to get him, so I've got no real gripes about that. And then you have Sadan Rafaela flying out, and now suddenly you have a righty on the mound, and uh-oh, your lefty killers are out there in the lineup. You have Romy Gonzalez and Rob Refsnyder in the lineup because, you know, you placed them in two innings ago, but now that we've rallied, uh-oh, we have two guys who, I mean, these guys are not good. You look at Refsnyder versus righties. Career numbers, he's got a 636 OPS. This year versus righties, he has a 650 OPS. Romy, much worse, 563 career, 658 this year. So, you know, was that too aggressive a move? Because Refsnyder's at bat at the very end. I was not very impressed with his discipline. Romy did get hit by a pitch, but that was a little lucky, if nothing else. I don't know. I mean, we were up against a pitcher who has a 5.01 now ERA on the season. Kasparius is not a flamethrower. This guy's not a stunner. This Dodgers bullpen is brutalized. Their whole pitching staff is brutalized. And it seems like Cora might have overmanaged a little bit. It could be a case of hindsight being 2020, but one pinch hit, okay. Two in a row, and now your bench is empty. Ugh, I don't like that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I would like to see Willier get a few more spots. You know, a late inning spot like that. You know, he leads our team in home runs. You know, I mean, we need power from somewhere in the lineup. And I get it. You know, the analytics say don't hit him against the lefty, and that's what they go by. And they're never gonna not go by that. They've proven that. But sometimes I just think, you know, I don't know. Willier is just, I feel like he's ready to break out. He's been hot. He's obviously a streaky player, but a big spot like that can really spark a team. You know, and I like to, and the back-to-back, yeah, the back-to-back is a lot. And then, right, then you get, you know, you have nothing for the ninth when we have no pinch hitter for the ninth now when we have two men on. Yeah, he overmanaged for sure on that one.
What do I call this team, Nick?
Cora's platoon something. What is it?
Platoon Dynasty.
Platoon Dynasty. That's exactly what it is. And this is why it's not super ideal. He just went full send with his lefty killers and was like, this is the spot for them. And they died on the hill, basically. You know, they didn't get it done. And the interesting thing for Romy is he did finally snap that 0 for 20 streak in his 21st at bat. It ended up being a grand slam, essentially won you the third game against the Phillies, avoided the sweep. And I don't know if you guys follow Matt McCarthy from the Sports Hub. He was on the show earlier in the year. And a couple of times he's speculated that Cora had the pitch, like he knew what was coming. And I don't know if they were tipping or he just knew the analytics. And apparently, according to Matt, they think they signaled. I guess Cora signals to the first base coach. First base coach will relay it to the hitter and said, this is probably what's coming. Romy crushes it. So I don't know if that's part of the secret sauce. That's perfectly legal. There's nothing, you know, if you're a casual fan and you're wondering if that sounds shady, perfectly legal. You just can't use electronics, basically, which we have gotten caught with back in, I think it was 2017. But yeah, so I guess what I'm getting at is, even though that one grand slam was so crucial from Romy, I just wonder if the league's kind of figured him out and maybe the magic isn't quite what it was.
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, the problem with Romy, I feel, is we sort of took that small sample size and ran with it when, you know, you'd think the league would know not to do that. It seemed like for a while people were talking about, oh, this guy should be playing every day. You know, this guy should be our full-time first baseman, and not realizing that he just is not the same player versus right-handed pitching as he is versus left-handed pitching. And so far this year, he's gotten 91 plate appearances versus lefties, 80 versus righties. That's all wrong for a guy like Romy. You know, if you're going to go in on platoon players, you sort of have to commit, I feel. And it was kind of strange to me. I mean, we have David Hamilton on the bench who just adds nothing, clearly. We've tried to pinch hit him in the past. It doesn't work. But I was a bit surprised that we didn't see an at-bat from Carlos Narvaez instead of a guy like Ref Snyder. You know, especially with, you know, a big opportunity to do something. And I understand that then you have Connor Wong right behind him. But Narvaez has power. He can maybe hit something over the monster. You never know. Wong was actually hitting the ball decently tonight. I don't know if you guys, anyone who watched the broadcast on Nesson, did you see that cruel camera trick where he hit some fly ball into the warning track, really shallow, but for some reason the way it was filmed, I was like, oh my god, a Connor Wong moonshot. It was so funny.
Nesson
does that all the time.
All
the time. It's you think it's a moonshot and it's just warning
track.
It was criminal.
It really was. I saw someone tweet, I forget who, they were like, what if Connor Wong's family was watching? You can't do that. What's wrong? You can't give hope like that. But no, it is frustrating. I mean, at the end of the day, if you have a bunch of players on your roster who struggle versus a particular handedness, they're going to get into opportunities where they're exposed. I love a platoon when it's in a small dose that's manageable. Moreland Pierce worked beautifully back in 2018. But that's because you had Moreland Pierce and you had guys at second base, a guy at short, a guy at catcher, guys all throughout the outfield, a guy at DH every single day. And the only real platooning aside from those two you would see is like Nunez and Devers, I think, split some time. Maybe Nunez and Holt split some time. Okay, you know, I don't know. I really wish that we were a bit deeper and not so wide, because it does just kind of feel like our 26-man roster is a little cluttered right now.
Don't forget, in 2018, Dombrowski went and got Ian Kinsler, who wasn't quite the bat that we wanted him to be, but he was the defender that we wanted him to be, except for that one play, I think, in the World Series. But I think Vasquez was the first baseman, though, at the time, if I'm being completely fair. It was the 18-inning game when all that wonky stuff went down. But But, you know, it's just, it was just nice to have a guy that would address needs. And, you know, Moreland and Pierce were two established veterans at the time. Romy and Toro are scrap heap guys that aren't established at all, really. You know, the White Sox gave up on Romy and we snagged him, and it's worked out, but it's not something you can build your season around, you know, for your roster around for the season. So it would just be nice to have a lineup mostly full of guys that can hit either side of the plate. And yeah, another guy we kicked around, I think on the air, we talked about maybe getting Sonny Gray.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the regular categories, ERA and stuff, don't look super shiny, but his Savant page is mostly red. You could do a one-stop shop there and get Wilson Contreras, who's an elite defender at first. Hits lefties better than righties, but it's not like a wide disparity. And he could be your first baseman. And you'd be taking on a lot of salary. I don't know how you try to offset some of that. I don't think you could just give him Yoshida. Like, that's just not going to work. But I don't know. I mean, now's the time to be bold. And like we mentioned last night on the Hot Takes episode, Jeff Passan two nights ago on Wednesday night put out a report saying that he's hearing the Red Sox are not inclined to make big moves. We don't need another Romy Gonzalez that's going to hit the opposite side of the plate, you know? So that's why I was full of piss and vinegar all day on Twitter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even if we do get O'Hearn is an established guy that can only hit one-handedness. You know, he kills righties. And so you could say, well, an O'Hearn platoon with Romy would be significantly better than Toro and Romy. That's fair enough. But at the same time, to see the Mariners go out and strike while the iron is hot and just grab Naylor for, I believe, their 13th and 16th ranked prospects in their system, which, to be fair, are higher than other teams just because the Mariners have, I want to say, 8 top 100 prospects. So, you know, their 13th and 16th might be another team's 6th and 9th, you know. But, you know, it stands that the Mariners went out there and they saw a player they liked and they got him. And you know what? Good on them for that. We saw the Orioles starting to sell off today. I saw one trade. I forget the guy's name, who it was.
Soto.
Yes. So the Diamondbacks, the Orioles seem to be settling in. I'm really interested at looking how far that fire sale goes. We see McMahon going from Colorado to New York, which was a huge surprise to everyone, probably most of all Yankees fans. I don't think that was really a name I heard tossed around too much in speculation, and it probably means they're out on Suarez.
That is what that means, yeah, and that's a multi-year thing for McMahon. So they kind of have their guy, and the Yankees have quite a history with Colorado. They got Troy Tulowitzki, or he might've went to the Blue Jays in between, but still a Colorado guy throughout his career. And then DJ LeMahieu. So seems like they're a common dance partner.
Would you guys be willing to give up someone for just a rental? Or do they need to have multiple years like usage already? Because I don't know if I want to, like, you know, just give up Duran or someone just for a guy that's going to be here half a year.
Definitely.
I agree.
I wouldn't give up. Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, guys like Miguel Blyce, you know, guys like maybe Blaze down in AAA, you know, is hitting very well. It's something like that. But even then, I mean, it is an interesting balance, and it is such a seller's market. So it's going to be very interesting to see. I wonder what the trade evaluators will say regarding what the Yankees gave up, because I know the Yankee system is a bit scarce, excuse me. So I'm kind of interested in what return Colorado got for McMahon.
I'm not sure either, yeah, but that's not a system I would be familiar with. Duran leads the Red Sox in doubles. Like, are you guys aware of this?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And we're going to, you know what's going to happen? So we might trade Duran. But what else is going to happen is they're going to trade Aroldis Chapman. And then Breslow is going to be like, well, I still think we can win. We're going to be a playoff team. That's what the plan is. So I just, with Duran specifically, I'm not willing to trade him for a rental unless an elite prospect is included in there. Mm-hmm. And that Salas kid that the Padres tried to get, or give us rather, he's only an A ball. Is that correct?
I believe he was just promoted to Double A this year. He doesn't have that much, that much experience there though.
So apparently, per reports, I think this came from Sean McAdam, the Padres offered Dylan Cease, who not pitching well either if you look at the surface categories, but another guy with a Savant chart that's deep red. So perhaps the only problem is Andrew Bailey doesn't seem to fix someone overnight. It takes time. So, but he is only a rental, and then that Salas kid would have been included, and then the Padres would have got Duran for this year and then three following years, which I think should command a bigger haul.
I agree completely. I mean, Salas, I've heard little murmurs that he's probably going to drop out of the top 100. His numbers have not looked good so far. He's only 19 in Double A. But right now, I think we are hoping we have our catcher in Narvaez, you know, so a top 150 catcher prospect isn't that exciting for Duran. And half a season of Cease, who, like you said, I think Cease would be a good acquisition. But I mean, he's a Boris client, I'm pretty sure, and he's probably going to demand a lot of money, you know, and that's always scary.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get, you know, I know it, like, we need to buy, and I want to buy. But if you're Breslow and you can say, well, I can give up someone to get this guy for a rental, or I can just sign him in the offseason, not give up anybody. It's not what we want to hear, but it's hard to go against that logic sometimes.
Definitely, especially if it does lead to a deep playoff run next year or the year after that. You know, I know that the problem that Red Sox fans, I think, are having right now, and I think I can speak for them because – I'm experiencing exactly this feeling, which is just a frustration. You know, we're a championship city with championship legacies across a lot of sports, you know, all of them, really, all the major ones. And unfortunately, the Red Sox are about to undergo their longest playoff drought, and definitely the longest World Series drought of really my lifespan, you know, which is crazy to think about. You know, maybe the Red Sox are a little spoiled in some ways, but at the end of the day, we should be a big money team. And, you know, I like to rag on the Yankees. I think we all do, but they do go the distance every year. They do at least buy themselves a lottery ticket at the very end. The Dodgers are very similar in that regard. They're building a Death Star over there. I think I heard they've gone through like 31 pitchers this year and they still find ways to win, you know? Ultimately, the Red Sox just need to figure out their approach a lot better, because whatever our system is, it's questionable whether or not it's working.
I mentioned this last night with Jeremy. I think what's ultimately going to cost us here is the fact that we traded our best hitter. I think that's, you know, the fan base seemed to be pretty evenly split. One side backed Devers, the other side backed Breslow. But at the end of the day, he was your best hitter. And you're a much different team with him towards the top of your lineup. And you didn't replace him. I think a lot of us were thinking, okay, something creative is coming, and probably more sooner than later. But it's getting late now. We're almost 5 days away from the deadline, and you need to go find the bat that you already had. I just That's so dumb. And if the Red Sox don't make aggressive, effective moves here to really give us a good chance to finally snap that streak that Nick was just talking about of not playing in October, you got to go find your impact guys. And you can't just do nothing in terms of salary and in terms of not gaining impact guys, because if you do, it really was just a salary dump at the end of the day from an executive that completely lost control of his roster.
100%. The thing that was getting me through that trade was the return was terrible. But it's like, all right, now we have all that money. Let's see what they're going to do. I really thought they were going to do something big. It felt like that for a while. But now I don't have any faith in that.
Yeah, and you know, the problem too is the fact that the lineup, I feel, is almost being made to hold too much pressure. You know, it really feels like the approach is just all wrong. And I've heard this in my own Twitter mentions a little bit. A lot of people are saying the idea is that we have the talent, but the execution is wrong. And I almost feel like first off, there's a hitting philosophy aspect to that in terms of when to play big, when to play small. You see guys swinging for the fences when maybe they shouldn't, so on and so forth. But right now, I mean, we've got like five guys in the lineup who this week have not been hitting. We have Alex Bregman coming back on a bum leg, you know, that's clearly still bothering him. He's not able to run at full speed, although his defense tonight was excellent. He made a wonderful play. But, you know, this week he's been rough. And we rush him back and we say, all right, you're in the two slot. You're our most important hitter, you know? Story, unfortunately, this week has had a very rough go of it. And that makes sense. I mean, he's a swing and miss guy. He chases balls a lot. So, you know, his quality of contact is going to hinge on his contact, really. Sadon Rafaela not having a good week. Willier Abreu not having a good week. Masataka Yoshida not having a good week. And guys are allowed to have bad weeks. But unfortunately, the Red Sox have not played well enough to be able to afford five crucial members of their lineup to be having off days at the same exact time. You know, it's really, really difficult to do. And I know that we can look at the Red Sox stats. You look at the numbers, you look at the leaderboards, you say, well, we're a great batting team. We're a great hitting team. We hit with runners in scoring position. Look at the numbers here. But it just doesn't feel that way. You know, we have 17 blowout wins, 10 blowout victory, or excuse me, 17 blowout wins, 10 blowout losses. And I have to wonder how much those victories are skewing our Pythagorean record, really. It's been really weird. We have 22 comeback wins, but 20 blown leads. And if that doesn't tell you the up and down nature of the Red Sox this year, it's tough. It's really tough.
It's not just tough. It's hard to process. It's hard to process what's going on right now and what we're hoping happens and what might ultimately happen. I didn't expect this season to be a roller coaster. Yeah. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, and people like have been saying, well, Devers hasn't been hitting in San Fran. It's like, all right, the dude moved across the country, knew everything, new ballpark. Give the guy a little bit. And, you know, he knew how to hit in Fenway. And that's for sure. And, you know, when your offense since the All-Star break has been basically giving you nothing, then it's really good to have a professional hitter, a really top hitter in the league, just to keep you steady sometimes.
Definitely. I think that the story of the second half so far has just been bad hitting, unfortunately. Yeah. It's been almost a reverse of what the first half was. The pitching, by and large, has been very solid, giving us pretty regular opportunities to win with a meltdown here and there, as can be expected. But I mean, two runs, and I don't mean to disrespect anyone, But two runs against Emmett Sheehan and Ben Kasperius across six innings, that doesn't cut it. I'm sorry. It doesn't cut it. You need four runs against guys like that at least. And if we lost this game 5-4, I would be sitting here with a lot better of a taste in my mouth, I think, yeah, than what we just got. You know, five hits on that night, it just feels like, God, these guys can do so much better. You look at the talent, you say, Duran, Bregman, Anthony, Story. And to their credit, by the way, Duran and Anthony have been having good weeks. You know, you look at the numbers, they're doing well. It's just everyone around them, unfortunately. You need nine guys, you know? You look at a lot of World Series rosters, you look at a lot of playoff teams, they have deep lineups, you know? And we have a deep lineup when our guys are all hitting, but it seems like they schedule days off together, you know? It's I was going to tell a crass joke, but I won't. But it's just very funny how these guys seem to rise and fall together. You know, they have good days on the same days. They have bad days on the same days. And it's tiresome. It really is.
Watching it, a Red Sox home runs just sucks.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's just not who we have ever been. Like, our leader in home runs at 20 after the All-Star break. I don't, that's just, it's not the Red Sox that we're accustomed to watching.
Last I checked, and I'm typically okay with this, but the Red Sox were leading all of Major League Baseball in doubles. Let's see if we still are. Yeah, and it's not even close. 212 doubles for the Red Sox. The next closest team is the Toronto Blue Jays at 187. So, you know, that's how we're winning games, apparently, but it just seems like the league is starting to figure out, you know, what the Red Sox are all about. Like, I think they're anticipating what Alex Cora is doing. I think a lot of managers are like, oh, this is a Romy Gonzalez spot coming up, or this is a Rob Refsnyder spot. And they're handling it and they're mixing their pitches accordingly. And I don't know how the Red Sox counter that now. That they've used up their bag of tricks, and our lineup just isn't that good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they know it's a Romy spot, and like, a team's scared of Romy Gonzalez coming up pinch hitting, like, ooh, big Romy coming to the plate.
They shouldn't be, but
no.
Just look at the infield right now. You've got a platoon at first that works out some of the time with Romy and Toro. You've got Rafaela at second. I don't know what the timetable is on Meyer. I guess it's probably fairly short. He's only
on a 10-day IL, yeah. I saw, which is hopefully encouraging.
Yeah. I mean, a sprain is just, it's just what his pain tolerance is going to be, basically. So I think probably not much longer than the minimum, but for the time being, you've got Rafaela there. His bat's still going to play, but the defense might not. There was a ball that Meyer definitely would have got, over towards first, but it got past Rafaela. I think Story is cooling off. I think, I'm not saying he's going to be the automatic out that he was the first couple months of the season, but I don't think he's going to give you that robust production that he gave you for 6 weeks starting in June. And, you know, Bregman had a nice hit tonight. I think he plate both of those runs. I want to say he did at least one of them. He hit one high off the monster. I thought it was gone. I think
Duran knocked in the first one.
Yep, oh, okay. Right. So just one then. Yeah. But yeah, so his bat's starting to come around, and apparently he's not going to have as many days off anymore. Hopefully he'll be running the bases saying, a little bit better. Yeah. But so then you got all that going on. Refsnyder's cooled off quite a bit. He did have a home run in one of the Phillies games. I want to say it was game two, and we lost regardless. And, you know, Abreu is streaky. I don't think he's been managed well. I mean, you just got to throw him out there against lefties rather, and let him figure it out. Let him be the stud corner outfielder that he can be. And, you know, you got Duran in center. I think he's on his floor right now. I think the ceiling is higher. And Anthony is putting together a good rookie year, but there's a lot of holes there. And I don't see this offense putting up 5 to 7 runs consistently. And we're on the same trajectory as we were last year. It's the same trajectory. And it's probably going to be the same type of moves at the deadline again.
Yeah, completely. You know, it's very frustrating too. I'm not necessarily a person who is of the mindset that, oh, you need hitters to know their role. You know, there's some speculation about, oh, this guy's hitting so well in the 9 slot, leave him there. You know, I'm not necessarily married to that, but we have seen in the past, guys will sort of volunteer themselves to come out of certain spots. Like I remember Andrew Benintendi, funnily enough, always said he hated leading off. You know, he was totally cool batting second, but for some reason in his head, starting a game, coming up to the plate, it changed his whole philosophy. And I think that was back in 2019. Very, very funny how guys will be a little neurotic about that, but it makes sense. I mean, you won't find a much more superstitious bunch than baseball players, I suppose, in a lot of ways. But the reason I bring this up is just because even though I don't necessarily believe that guys need to have set roles in a lineup to succeed, we have been bouncing guys around a lot, especially around that cleanup hitter role. For a while, it was Narvaez. Now it's Story. I hate Story there personally. Story, like we said, I mean, this is a guy, you look at his numbers, he refuses to walk, he strikes out a lot, he's constantly chasing pitches out of the zone. That is not a cleanup hitter. That is a guy who you have down at number 7 or something like that, and when he's hitting, he's, you know, good for him, just like Jackie Bradley, right? You take the opportunities where that guy is hot, and you ride it, but you don't take that as a sign that he's figured it out, and you don't put him up to number 4. Yoshida batting 5th, again, ahead of Rafaela and Abreu, who I feel are having much better seasons, deserve it a lot more. It's just a bit frustrating. And, you know, you run some math, you crunch some numbers, you look at the algorithms that all of these teams use. And funnily enough, there's very little variance according to the numbers when it comes to outcomes based on how you order your guys between most efficient and least efficient. But I don't care what the computer says in this regard. I want a good feeling lineup, you know? I want one that I'm confident in. And tonight, I wasn't particularly confident in it. And again, I mean, you look at their performances. I don't think the order mattered much, but it is just something to note going forward. It feels like we're relying a little too much on guys like Story and Yoshida figuring it out.
With our best lineup, who's the cleanup hitter?
Can I say Rafael Devers?
It's scary. I mean, you don't have one, really. I mean, it's been Narvaez at times. Anthony has hit mostly in the heart of the order. It was the number 3 spot for a little while. And yeah. I think they've moved him around a little. I don't know. I mean, Rafaela has cooled off a little bit, but I think he's your best hitter at the moment. I think Duran could be if he can just get more consistent and, you know, give more competitive at-bats against lefties. Tonight, I really thought his first couple of at-bats, he looked extremely locked in. He drew a walk right away. And it just seemed like there was a little bit more spark in his first couple at-bats, and I think that's been missing. But it's a lineup. There's no defined roles in this lineup. It's just a mishmash of things. That's what Alex Cora likes to do. And I don't know. And, you know, mercifully this week will finally end and we'll know what the hell we ended up doing. But this is Breslow's second year, and he's not a guy that seems to come up with solutions during the season. Like, he's not a problem solver. That's not what he's good at. So he's got five more days to flip that narrative, but I think it's the same season all over again.
Yeah.
You're going to be 78 to 84 wins somewhere in there. And you're going to get the same rhetoric. I'm hoping he gets tossed. I'm all in on tossing Breslow. And I don't know if I'll get my wish in year two. Certainly we will next year if it ends up being the same, but it's just a vicious cycle that just never ends.
Yeah, I think you can sit on being a young team one more year, and then this is his last year being able to sit on that this isn't the timetable and all that.
Most definitely. You know, what I'm really interested in over the next couple of days is seeing the order in which and what teams, of course, wave the white flag. You know, because right now, the Rangers are in striking distance. They really have a shot at taking this wild card, not just from us, from the Mariners or the Yankees, too. I mean, they're breathing down everyone's necks in the wild card race. The Rays are not as far behind as we would like them to be. Even teams like the Guardians, the Royals, the Twins, it's going to be really interesting to see. You know, you look at them, 2.5 games back in the wild card race, 4 games back in the wild card race. Are they going to go on a little 3-game winning streak here at the end and feel like they have a shot? Over in the NL, I think it's a little more defined, maybe. The Diamondbacks, we know, are waving the white flag. You'd have to imagine the Cardinals and the Reds feel a little bit of, you know, indigestion right now at their position. Because on one hand, yes, they're close enough to want to compete. But also, you look at the juggernauts that are in that league and you're like, oh, my God. You know, we have to contend with the Cubs, the Mets, the Phillies, the Dodgers, of course, even the Brewers now who have come out of nowhere. You know, that's a really tough league. So I feel like you can't really make a trade with a team who has deluded themselves or convinced themselves maybe they have real confidence. But if they believe, oh, yeah, no, we're going to win, why would we sell any pieces? It's like, oh, God, great. This guy over here thinks he still has a chance, so he won't give me the starting pitcher I need. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how the chips fall over the next few days.
The Padres is another interesting one to watch. They're 6 games above. Let me get the wild card standings up. They're flirting with the line, it feels like. And
they own the third wild card right now. They're half a game up on the Giants.
Yeah, and I feel like who do you trust more at this moment? I feel like I trust the Giants.
Oh, that's a real coin toss for me, honestly.
I would say the Giants.
Yeah. I that's kind of how I feel. And what makes the Padres interesting is how desperate will Preller get? Like, will we get the stupid trade? And if you're a pipe dreamer like I am, it's too bad they just didn't fall apart a little bit sooner. And maybe we could have a conversation about Fernando Tatis. That's something we've been talking about, Doug. But
yeah.
But I don't think there's any scenario right now with the aggressiveness they're trying to get Duran. I doubt they're gonna make a rash move like that. But yeah, and so the Rays game and a half out of the wild card. I think Texas is going to wiggle their way back in. I think the Guardians are out. That's it. I mean, you look below that wild card line right now. It's Texas and Tampa, and I don't know what Tampa's going to do at the deadline.
It's going to be really interesting. Like I said, I know that word, you know, I'm going to overuse it. I'm going to beat it into the ground, but every time we get to the deadline, it almost feels like it just gets more exciting each year, more peculiar, you know, the way teams are going about it. You don't see teams really selling low too much anymore. They raise the prices up as high as they can go, and they see who they can fleece when it comes to just simple rentals. So a guy like Eugenio Suarez, who even knows what the asking price is right now? If the Yankees totally gave up on him, that's interesting.
It is interesting, and I just wonder, what's the market for him now with one less team? You know the Mariners want him bad, and perhaps that's where he ends up, but I don't think Texas is really looking to upgrade in that area. Maybe Tampa. I mean, they did trade for Nelson Cruz. They gave up Joe Ryan in that trade, but I don't know. I mean, do the Brewers need a first baseman? The Mets don't. Who's playing third for the Mets?
I think Brett Batty should be, right? Either okay. Him or Mark Vientos usually.
Okay. So arguably they could be a player in that. Seems like Philadelphia just doesn't want to commit to Alec Boehm. So I wouldn't rule out Dombrowski. So you could put the Phillies in that sweepstake. I don't know. Who does San Francisco have? Well, they got Devers at first now, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how aggressive everyone else is willing to be. And if you want to, you know, if you want to be a pipe dreamer, maybe that's when the Red Sox do swoop in here and do something. I hate that he's a rental. I'd love to. I mean, he's at the Christian Walker point of his career. That's the type of deal he's going to get this winter. So if he loves Boston and you're the Red Sox, Christian Campbell's stock is way down right now, and he's not playing well in the entire month of July down in Worcester. He's got two home runs and two doubles, and he's hitting 207. So he's not on track, and right. I don't think we're going to see him for the rest of the season at, you know, as far as the big leagues go. So I don't know. We'll watch Suarez's market, but I don't think it's helpful to the Diamondbacks that the Yankees are out.
No, not at all. And you know, the fact that Naylor went first too, I mean, that gives the Mariners a lot more leverage, I would say, in their negotiations. Sometimes if you bet on yourself, you know, it's like playing the stock market. Sometimes you're going to win big. Sometimes you're going to lose. It's very possible that when it came to Eugenio Suarez, the Diamondbacks decided to sort of bluff a little bit, and it might bite them. So if that could profit us somehow, I'd love that.
Jerry DePoto in Seattle is on the hot seat. So, you know, he may be desperate enough to pay the price, whatever that ends up being. Cashman should be on the hot seat, but Steinbrenner never fires anyone, right, including the manager. So I don't know. What do we have tomorrow? We've got Garrett Crochet and Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
Should be an interesting match. That's a 7:15 p.m. starting time, Eastern Daylight Time. Then the next day, Sunday, we've got a 1:35 game, Dustin May versus Walker Buehler. And that will be, I mean, both of those guys have had some ugly seasons so far. How are you two feeling about these last two games? You think we can pull something out or no?
I always think we're going to win Crochet Day. And, you know, Walker's looked all right the last couple. His last three starts, he's gone seven. He's given up a three runs or so, I think, and under. And if he can pull it together, and you know, he knows that he should know the Dodgers lineup, you know, and I think I would be very confident in a win on Crochet Day. So I think Sunday, you know, day game, I think we could really pull out the rest of these last two games.
I'm pretty nervous about Sunday with Buehler. I mean, no team in Major League Baseball knows him better
that's fair.
Than the Dodgers. Yeah, and you know, what's Kershaw topping out at? Is he even throwing 90 anymore? I don't know.
Maybe 90.
Yeah. 88. Yeah.
So if we can sit on the off-speed stuff, you know, perhaps it could be one of those games where the balls are going over the fence. But and he is a lefty, so that sort of plays into the old platoon dynasty there. Dustin May, I mean, Sunday's game is just the biggest wild card right now. Bueller seems to have it together, but again, that is the one team that knows him well. Dustin May is coming off of a okay start, 4 2/3 scoreless, but he's not really punching guys out like he used to. And the Giants just absolutely tattooed him for 7 earned just 2 starts ago. So I don't know where to go. I really thought the Red Sox would win tonight against Sheehan, and we didn't. Yeah. So, and I thought going into the series, the Red Sox would probably win 2 out of 3 because we were catching the Dodgers at the right time. They're not as cold as the Tigers are right now, having lost 10 of their last 11, or maybe it's 11 of the last 12. It's ugly, whichever way it is. And the gross thing is the Tigers are still 15 above 500, you know, so I don't think I would even be panicking, really, if I'm a Detroit fan.
No.
Maybe the team's just tanking to force the front office to get them their guy. Maybe they're just smart. But, that would be funny. Yeah, maybe they'll end up with Bregman next week. Who knows? But, you know, why not have 2 salary dumps? But, yeah, so anyway, I've got the Red Sox winning the Crochet Day. I will say this. If we don't win on the Crochet Day, and anything's possible, that's really going to flip the next several days on its head. And let's see, Thursday, I believe, is an off day. So let's see, this would be the last Crochet start before the deadline. So unless we are playing Thursday, then that would be his next, but I don't think we are. So yeah, I don't know.
Losing today really puts you behind too, because Bello pitched so good.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's just
the offense gave you nothing. So
yeah, we're gonna live and die with our offense this series and really the whole season. I mean, you've got to score runs. Just like you said, Terry, the Tigers are ice cold, but sort of echoing back to something I said earlier, the Tigers, meanwhile, are in a position where they can afford everyone to have a bad week at once. You know, they're perfectly all right. You know, no need to panic over there. Probably need to make some adjustments, go into the locker room, say, hey, guys, wake up, please. You know, but I don't know. I'll be optimistic. I'll say we're still going to take the series. All of my belly aching over this 9-game stretch, we're still going to win, you know, 4 out of 9, which is perfectly survivable. And if that doesn't happen, then the narrative will be a lot more a lot more dire, I would say. But for right now, I mean, Kershaw versus Crochet should be fun. Almost a passing of the torch in some regard there, I would say. Crochet's definitely got the potential to be, you know, a Hall of Fame career. Obviously, way too early to say for him, but he's definitely got that dog in him. Walker Bueller, I don't know what kind of dog he's got in him, but I guess we're going to find out. Thank you guys so much for joining us for the show. I've been Nick, joined by Doug and Terry. We've been the Bastards. Let's go, Red Sox. Hopefully, we can turn this around. Take care.